If you will all please turn to page 32, we will sing God Be Merciful to Me. If you will all please turn to page 50, we will sing, I'll Early Seek Thee, Gracious Lord.
Thank you.
please turn to page 63. Page 63, we will sing, Lord, Incline Me to Repent.
Welcome to the Day of Atonement. Let's turn to Leviticus 23 and pick up where we get a chance to actually understand God's holy days. Leviticus 23, and we'll start in verse number 27. Also on the 10th day of the 7th month, there shall be a Day of Atonement. It shall be a holy convocation unto you, and ye shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. Verse number 28. And ye shall do no work in that same day, for it is a day of atonement, to make an atonement for you before your God. For whatsoever soul should be that shall not be afflicted in that same day, he shall be cut off from among his people. And whatsoever soul it be that doeth any work in that same day, that same soul I will destroy from among his people. Verse number 31. And ye do no manner of work, and it shall be a statute forever throughout your generations, in all your dwellings. And it shall be unto you a Sabbath of rest, and ye shall afflict your souls in the ninth day of the month, at even, from even to even, ye shall celebrate your Sabbath. The word afflict means by fasting and prayer. It's meant to afflict your soul, understanding at one, to be at one with God. This day is the fifth segment of God's plan on salvation. Have you ever thought what this day represents? The question I'm going to ask you today. When you consider how important this day is concerning God's plan of salvation and what it represents, it's actually pretty joyous. But understanding how we observe it, we understand, obviously, it's to be sobering and humbling as we come before him this day. The title of the sermon is Peace Will Only Come Through Christ. You know, this world screams peace, peace, doesn't it? They brag about how they bring about peace, but in no way you see in this world around us today, we see anything perfect by any means. Satan is influence, and his influence actually covers all aspects of our lives. And only through Christ will you find peace. Only through Christ will you be able to obviously qualify but find some solstice. Satan's a destroyer. And what this day represents, think about removing this being for 1,000 years. It's just going to be an amazing time period. A world actually ushered in by peace through Christ. That's the point. Peace will only come through Jesus Christ. Point number one. Will Satan ever allow men to live in peace? There's several things to ask. First of all, understanding his nature. That question can only be understood when we ask a couple other questions. Just address this just straightforward. Point number one. How does the Bible describe Satan's nature? Is it peaceful? Think about what I'm stating here and think about this individual that's going to be removed. How much joy will this day actually bring? Understanding we're going through affliction today. And as we go through this time period, it's humbling. And we're asked, obviously, not to work. We're asked to afflict our souls. That tells you the seriousness that we're looking at these events. But when Satan's removed, as we understand he will be, pictured by the world tomorrow, the millennium, also the Feast of Tabernacles, which is coming. You think about this segment. This has to be done. This individual has to be removed for this world to actually have peace. Will Satan ever allow men to have peace? That's the point. 1 Peter 5, and verse number 6. 1 Peter 5:6. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. Be sober. This is the difference in defiant nature of Satan the devil. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. That's the nature of this individual. He wants no peace. He's looking to destroy. He has accusations. Either it comes through accusations, either it comes to physical desire, or in this situation, as we can we'll read here in several verses, he's in the accuser as well. Think about the joy that's going to be when this individual is removed. This has to take place. This is the fifth segment of God's plan of salvation, and the importance of this segment is huge, monumental, for us to have a millennium period at peace. Removing this individual is quite a priority. Let's turn to Mark 4. I'll pick the pace up here. Mark 4 and verse number 15. Mark 4 and verse 15. And these are they by the wayside, where the word was sown. And when they have heard, Satan cometh immediately and taketh away the word that was sown in their hearts. He has no desire for you to know the truth. He has no desire for the world to know the truth. Actually, as we get into some of these verses, you understand. The God of this world has blinded the minds. It's only through Christ that you could see. It's only through Christ that you see. Satan will never bring peace. He'll never usher in peace. That's the point. Verse number 16. And these are they likewise, which also are sown on the stony ground, who, when they have heard the word, immediately receive it with gladness, but they have no root in themselves. So to endure for a time afterwards, the affliction and persecution arises for the word's sake, and immediately they stumble, they're offended. And I only bring that point up because who's going to be the one that persecutes and afflicts? Removing this being is huge. Quite a understanding, something to actually configure. Satan has to be removed for us to have peace. How about Matthew 4? Turn to Mark 4. Let's turn back to Matthew 4. Matthew 4, and verse number 8. There's a lot to read here, but I just want to pick up on this, how he addressed Christ. And think about this created being addresses the Creator in this fashion. Again, the devil taketh him up into an exceedingly high mountain and showeth him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them, and saith unto him, all these things will I give thee, if thou wilt fall down and worship me. I often thought about that statement. If you'll fall down and fawn like a dog, if you just give credence to me. Christ responded appropriately and said, then saith Jesus unto him, get hence, Satan, for it is written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and thou shalt only serve him. Look at that point. How many people in this world would take that temporary concept, just fall all over themselves to receive that moment of power? God's thoughts are so much higher than man's. And the thoughts of Satan the devil, we understand as we're reading his nature. We understand some of more of his nature. To remove this individual will just be a blessing for everybody. You need to get this being out of the picture. Turn to Isaiah 14. Isaiah 14, we learn a little bit more about Satan's nature. Isaiah 14 and verse number 12. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God, above the angels of God, and I will sit upon the mountain of the congregation in the sides of the north. Think about that. Whose throne's there? Verse number 14. And I will ascend above the heights of the clouds, and I will be like the Most High. Me. How many men have desired such power? How many men would give their souls for such power? This temporary life. That's all it is. We expire. And we will expire. That's the point. Some things are forever. And some things are eternal. Will we be part of that? Satan has no ambition of making peace. He has no ambition of elevating anybody else into any type of authority. He's looking out for himself, period. Turn to Luke 22. When you converse and think about this being, Luke 22, in verse number 31, what's the process? You got to ask yourself the question, what's his ambition for you? What's the process of sifting wheat? Do you ever consider it? I mean, it becomes powder. Think about what's being said here. Luke 22 and verse number 31. And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. Look at the wording here, desired to have you. It means he's asked for you. But I have prayed for thee, that they, faith, fail not. And when thou hast converted, strengthen thy brethren. He isn't looking to nurture and help you. Think of all the obstacles that all these individuals faced. These servants faced which in their final demise, for example, they actually came to. How much faith is it going to be to understand we have to hold on to the end? Because this being is relentless. He's not going to leave you alone. You got to remove him. And that's the point. Will we remove him? Let's turn to Revelation. Revelation 13, 6. Revelation 13, 6. And he opened his mouth and he blasphemed against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was, this is the satanic nature of this being. He's actually promoting, obviously, the satanic concept. And it was given unto him to make wars with the saints and to overcome them. We're talking about this beast power. And the power was given unto him by the kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world. This beast power, which has a satanic nature, has an agenda. And we know from Matthew 24, if it weren't for Christ's return, no flesh would be saved. I'm in a transition. I like some of these other translations better for some of these other verses. We can pick up the same things. We'll turn to 1 John 3:8. And I'm going to read out of this for a couple of these verses, for example. I thought it gave a better insight of what I'm trying to say here. 1 John 3:8. So whosoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil. For the devil has been sinning from the beginning. And the reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the works of the devil. Think about this spirit. It has to be removed. 1 John 5 and verse number 19. We know that we are from God, and the whole world lies in the power of the evil one. The whole world is captivated by this being. 1 Thessalonians 2 and verse number 18. 1 Thessalonians 2 verse 18. Because we wanted to come to you, I, Paul, again and again. But Satan hindered us. Yeah, it's a different in the King James Version. That's a good read as well. But think about this being. He's not going to give you peace. He's only want to take from you what you have to bring to the table. That's the point. Think about 1,000 years. Those are that'll be taught and transformed in the millennium. Think about this period of time that they won't have to face this adversary. And you not understand what happens at the end of 1,000 years. Still, how many people will fall short? I just find it amazing as you think about the nature. He was created perfect. He was given rank. He was given authority. It wasn't enough, was it? How many of us fall short and we have that same temperament? We continually want more. If we don't get more and we pout or go away upset. You know, God's got something in mind for you. He's got something in mind. You'll be a ruler or a priest in the world tomorrow. What else could possibly you desire? Think about that, the potential that you've been given. John 8 in verse number 44. I'm going to read from the Standard Version, original King James, not the New King James, this verse. You're of your father the devil, and your lust of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. You think about the difference. I like the point where it actually talks about his character. I'm going to give you the rendition there too. Chapter 8, John 8, verse 44. You are the father of the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, and it has nothing to do with the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks of his own character. That's the point. Kind of a different verbiage, but think about this. He speaks of his own character, and that's exactly what he does, doesn't it? He's a liar and the father of lies. 2 Corinthians 4. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse number 4. In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. Ephesians 6, 12. Ephesians 6, 12. We all know these verses well. We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in heavenly places. That's who we fight against on a daily basis. How does the Bible describe Satan's nature? He is proud, he's boastful, wicked, a liar, a deceiver, seeking only his best interests. He's a manipulator, beautiful to look at, and evil. Think about that. Very dangerous combination. Think about what this day represents, and think about the contrast from the world's values. As we read in John 8:44, his own character. This world has developed Satan's character. They've evolved around it. Think about what we follow. In contrast, obviously, we'll talk more about this at the Feast of Tabernacles. But in contrast, whose nature are we supposed to be looking up to? You know, Satan the devil has all these elements, but first fruits and teachers and priests in the world tomorrow and rulers in the world tomorrow will be being catechized now. If we're not paying attention or adhering, obviously that could be an issue, but we know this answer. Who we're in contrast from Satan the devil, who are we supposed to be looking up to? You know, how about Christ's nature? What does it say about Christ's nature? Let's turn to Philippians 2. Philippians 2 and verse number, we'll pick it up in verse 3. Philippians 2 and verse 3. Let nothing be done through strife and vainglory, but with a lowliness of mind, let each esteem the other better than themselves. That's totally opposite from what we see and what we are objectively told in the world around us today, right? We don't look upon another. We boast for ourselves. We puff up ourselves. That's the difference. That's the satanic mindset that's actually so deep enthralled in this world. And think about this. Think about the contrast which Christ gave us and what we should be acting like and portraying. Look not on every man his own things, but every man on the things of others. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon the form of a servant, and made in likeness of men. And being, verse 8, Philippians 2, verse 8, and being found in the fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even to the death of the cross. Talk about a contrast of nature. We're talking about contrast of the nature that actually permeates throughout this world, the present world. Let's turn back to John 1. John 1. We understand the difference between these beings. John 1 and verse number 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The God of the Old Testament became Jesus Christ. It's about to tell you that same thing here. And the same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him. Without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. And there was a man sent from God, whose name was John. And the same came to bear witness of that light, and all men through him that might believe. He was not that light, but he was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light. The lighteth every man that cometh into the world. And he was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born. The word is born means begotten. Begotten, not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh, and he dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory. And the glory as of only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. Verse 10, he was a creator. He was a part of the creation team. You know, Christ took on the form of a servant. Satan wants to be God. There's a difference, obviously, in this picture. Satan will never bring peace. The only being that will bring peace back to this world is when Christ returns. This world will not know peace until that happens. And this being, this is Satan, the devil, and his demons, are put away for 1,000 years. Think about this contrast with this day pictures. The King James Version says, thou was perfect. I want to read Ezekiel 28:15 out of the New King James Version. I apologize for keep switching back and forth, but I think some of these statements are better out of the New King James. You were blameless in all your ways from the day you were created until unrighteousness was found in you. Iniquity is what it says in King James. How important is it in God's plan of salvation to remove this adversary? You know, Christ took the form of a servant. Satan wants to be the world's ruler. You know, definitely the difference. Let's turn to Ephesians 2. Ephesians 2, verse number 1. And you hath he quickened, who were dead in trespasses and sins, wherewith in times past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, and the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience, among whom also we all had our conversation. We conducted ourselves in times past with the lust of the flesh. As we continue there is only one way for this world to have peace. Isaiah 9:6 tells us, "For a child will be born unto us, a son will be given to us, and the government will rest on his shoulders. He will be named Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, and Prince of Peace." Peace will only come through Jesus Christ when he returns. It won't involve this present world. And this being has to be removed. Point number two. So what does this present day represent for us? Turning back to Leviticus 16. We go back a little further than Leviticus 23. Leviticus 16. And verse number 7. "And he shall take two goats and present them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And Aaron shall cast lots upon the two goats, and one for the Lord, and the other for the scapegoat, the Azazel goat. And Aaron shall bring forth the goat which in the Lord's lot fell, and shall offer him as a sin offering. The goat which on the lot fell of the scapegoat, the Azazel goat, shall be presented alive before the Lord, and shall make an atonement with him, and shall be let go into the wilderness, the scapegoat into the wilderness, be set before by a fit man." There is only, as we get into this, as we understand what this day represents, there's only certain times you look at your life. We're instructed to afflict ourselves this time. There's only certain times in our lives we're instructed to absolutely afflict ourselves. Other times we afflict ourselves, we come before him humbly the same way. We're coming before him humbly today. We're showing that we're of men. We're weak of nature. We have a lot to fix. And that's the point. And as he returns, as represented by the Feast of Trumpets, but his glory and his kingdom will be the Feast of Tabernacles. You can't have this being within that realm. You can't have peace. There will be no peace. And we're looking at 1,000 years of peace. That's what the Feast of Tabernacles represents. How awesome is this plan of salvation? This Day of Atonement has to be part of that. When you talk about, when you consider Christ's nature, John 1, flip back to John 1, 28 real quickly. John 1, verse number 28. "And these things were done in Bethabara beyond Jordan, where John was baptizing. And the next day John seeth Christ coming unto him, and saith, Behold, the Son of God, which taketh away the sin of the world." You know, Christ was our Passover. He ultimately became our ultimate Passover sacrifice. So what happened to the Azazel? What did the Azazel represent? He was sent away into the wilderness by a fit man. And the Azazel goat represents a time when Satan, as we've discussed here several times, will be bound 1,000 years. How do we know that? Let's turn to Revelations 20. Revelations 20 and verse number 1. "And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit, and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on that dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan. And he bound him 1,000 years. And he cast him into a bottomless pit, and he shut him up. And he set a seal upon him, that he should deceive the nations no more, till 1,000 years be fulfilled. And after that, he must be loosed for a little season." The Azazel goat represents this day. When we think about it, do they know it's coming? I mean, you got to ask yourself several things that allude that way. Let's turn to Jude. Verse 6, when the angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation, he hath reserved in everlasting chains under the darkness until the day of judgment. All demons that have been with him, serving him with his arrogance, what's their fate? What does it say? The angels that kept not their first estate, these are the ones. They know their fate. Let's turn to 2 Peter. 2 Peter 2. 2 Peter 2, verse 1. But there were false prophets also among the people, even there as false teachers who privately bring damnable heresies, even denying the Lord that brought them, bring upon themselves swift destruction. And many shall follow their pernicious. The word pernicious means destructive. They'll follow their destructive ways by reason of whom the way of truth shall be evil spoken of. And though covetousness shall feigned words make merchandise of you, whose judgment now of a long time lingereth not, and their damnation slumbereth not. For, written before is one we want to get to, for if God spared not the angels that sinned, but have cast them down to hell. And hell here is the word Tartaru. It means a place of restraint. One of these definition breakdowns. Delivered them in chains of darkness to be reserved to judgment. False teachers, demons as well. As first fruits, do we not understand their fate? Matthew 25. Matthew 25, verse number 41. Then he shall say unto them on the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. How many verses tells us what's going to take place? You got to ask the question. I've always asked the question myself. Don't they know it? You got to ask. Let's turn to Matthew 8. Matthew 8 and verse number 29. We'll pick it up in verse number 28. And when he was come to the other side of the country of Gadarenes, there met him two possessed with devils, coming out of the tombs, exceedingly fierce, so that no man might pass by that way. And behold, they cried out, saying, what have we to do with thee, Jesus, Son of God? Art thou come to torment us before the time? Or before the time? Before the time begs the question, how much do they know? Luke 8 and verse number 28. Luke 8 and verse 28. He cried out and fell down before him with a loud voice and said, what have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of living God most high? I beseech thee, torment me not. For he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man, and for oftentimes he had caught him up. And he was kept bound with chains and fetters, and he brake the bands, and was driven of the devil in the wilderness. And Jesus asked him, what is thy name? And he said, Legion, for there are many demons that are entered into him. And they besought him that he would not command them to go out into the deep. Do demons know their final destination? Several things you got to question here. But think about these things. Are these beings? Consider they've been created. They were created. But they didn't keep the first estate. Did they? They disobeyed. They knew better. You can continually read this passage here. As it tells you, first, they tried to destroy the man And they found pleasure, apparently, in destroying the pigs, the swine. They asked to be cast out into the swine. They ran them off the cliff. Their entire ambitions destroy. You can't have peace with that type of spirit. Totally contrasting from what we have. The days which are coming represent God's rule. There will be peace. And we will be addressing that issue as we understand at the Feast of Tabernacles. Some religions teach that all these days were hung up on the cross, and we no longer have to keep these feast days. But as we see, Christ's disciples taught and kept these after he had already ascended. They weren't thrown out. Several facets we can actually go to there, but I just want to go to one very pertinent. Let's go to Acts 20:27. Acts 27. And verse number 9. Acts 27 and verse number 9. Now when much time had been spent, and when the sailing was now dangerous, because the fast was already passed, Paul admonished them. The fast, break it down, look it up. It's the Day of Atonement. Paul was keeping it after Christ ascended. Several things that don't compute when you talk to other individuals and talk to other religions. In conclusion, you know, Satan has no ambition of initiating peace. Peace will be ushered in, as we heard in Isaiah, through God's word, through this comforter, the individual we know as Christ. As he returns, he'll bring a government of peace. And you won't have Satan involved at that point in time. As long as he's in the picture, men will never know peace. This day represents a 1,000-year period where he will be removed. When you consider the rebellious attitude and the deceitful nature that this individual presents every day, he brings out man's bad nature. Incredibly so, doesn't he? We must embrace this day and understand what it means. Humble. At one. Atonement. At one with God. We have been commanded to afflict our souls today. Our souls. Ourselves and our souls today. Not to work. Be reverent. Be sober. Understanding what this day represents. Although it is a very sobering and humbling holy day, removing Satan the devil for 1,000 years will be a glorious occasion. And that's not going to come by chance. That's going to only come when Christ makes the determination at the Feast of Trumpets, what the Feast of Trumpets represents, his return. How glorious will that day be? And how glorious will it be when we no longer have to face this adversary?
If you will all please turn to page 111, we will sing, "Search Me, O God."